It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 357. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please remember to visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me suggestions for future show topics or any question. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message, and I got two voicemails for later in the show. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow. Send me a friend request on Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow. I have a jam-packed show. Lots of consulting stories from in the trenches this week, and I have an annoying printer question that came up today for a client. I'm actually going to be on site again tomorrow, so I need your help for suggestions on this. I hate printers. I hate them. I have lots of other great things to talk about. Voicemails are interesting. I don't know if we're going to get to the stack of email. I have a couple that I'm going to try to get to, and I actually have music lined up for the end of the show. But before we get started, online meetings are a great tool for businesses to work smarter. That's why I recommend GoToMeeting by Citrix. It's the easiest, most reliable online meeting service available. You will save money by holding an online meeting because you don't have to go through the expense of gas, with the gas prices the way they are, tolls, the time that it takes, and the travel expenses, they just mount up. You can hold unlimited meetings for just one flat rate, and it's easy to start a meeting with just one click. And you get to try it for free for 30 days, but you got to visit gotomeeting.com. Click on the try it free button and enter the promo code podcast. So that's gotomeeting.com. Click on the try it free button and then enter that promo code podcast, and you get to play with it for 30 days and see how great it is. Let's kick things off by me asking for help with a printer problem. Now, this one might be a little easier. I don't know. And I was hit with this today when I was on site for a client, and he said, oh yeah, by the way, I have this annoying printer problem. We have a network printer. It's a Dell 2350 D as in David, N as in Nancy. So it's duplex network. The printer works great. It prints. I installed the full driver from everybody. They have a second tray. The tray is working. It's recognized by the equipment on the printer preferences for everybody that's printing to it. It sees tray one and tray two. So riddle me this. How come no matter what they do, no matter what tray they pick in the preferences, when they go to print something, they can only print from tray two? It's like tray one doesn't even exist. Now, tray one is the smaller 250 sheet limit. And then the second one was the bigger add-on that's a 550 page sheet feeder. It's like tray one's not even there. Everything's been reseated. Have no idea why all of a sudden nobody can print to tray one. And of course, tray one is where they want to pull the letterhead. And then the regular print in the bigger bay, you know, for the feeding of the standard paper. If you have any ideas as to how to even begin troubleshooting this, I would appreciate it, because I hate printer problems, as you know, and they're annoying, and what can I do? It's there, and I got to deal with it, and I got to solve it for them. please send me any recommendation, and I will then share the solution, and I will try them all out. Now on to my client that I installed the dual monitors and the video card that connects HDMI to the TV. I opened up brand new Samsung 20-inch monitors that I purchased from Newegg, and I got to call Newegg about this. The boxes were not tampered with. They were in mint factory condition. The monitors are awesome. They're Samsung 20-inch. They tilt. They're gorgeous. But they came with VGA cables. Are you kidding me? This monitor has the capability of DVI and VGA, and they did not send me both cables. There's no way I would have even remotely thought of them not having a DVI cable. Well, of course, the video card for the dual monitors is DVI. I don't understand why I had now DVI and I had a VGA cable. Now, luckily, in the trunk of my car, I have two DVI to VGA cables. I was able to use those, not the cables, but the adapters. So in case I'm ever in an emergency situation like that, I keep those adapters in my trunk. So I was able to, and luckily I have two, I was able to use them. And now the cables were just a little too short. We needed a few more feet from where the system is being located and the location of the monitor. So I figure, you know what? Those adapters actually cost as much or more than the cables. I purchased two DVI cables and just received them, and I'm going to be installing them sometime this weekend or possibly tomorrow, just to get that extra length, and I get the VGA cable back. I can have that as a spare, and I get my adapters back, which is more important. Keep in mind to always be prepared like that for adapters, or I wouldn't be able to go forward with the installation of the system. Let's now fast forward to Wednesday, where that was Tuesday. On Wednesday, I'm with a client. This new client, well, it's actually a new office. This new office that they purchased has existing employees in it, and they really like took over a practice at this office. And they had some legacy equipment still there, workstations, and they had, they have a high-speed internet, but they have a very small router with four ports, and they only have three network connections right now that were available. Well, they needed to add more network connections in the office. There was an office next door that had no Cat5. And I'm looking up and I'm counting the tiles on the ceiling. And I know in my trunk, I had a 50-foot Cat5e cable. And this is where, if you are consulting or doing any work, you can't have everything, but you do want to have as much as you can. And that 50-foot cable has been in my trunk for a year, and I have not had to use it. But it was nice to have on Wednesday, and got a ladder and ran the cable up the wall through the drop ceiling into the next office. We have connectivity. It's temporary because we'll get it professionally wired where it'll look nice. Actually, this didn't look too bad, and we'll have that done in a week or so. Also, I keep a spare 16-port switch that's noisy. The fan makes a noise, and I keep that for an emergency in the trunk of my car. Well, we didn't have enough ports to accommodate some of these connections. There were two more computers that I had to hook up, which meant right now I'm adding three network connections where there were no more ports. So I go to my trunk, I get the 16-port switch, I get some 15-foot patch cables, which, by the way, and this we were talking about this in the pre-show, I keep spare Cat5 cables, and you know I love Monoprice, great place for purchasing your cables, and they're not a sponsor. The cables that I carry are 3 foot, 10 foot, and 15 foot. And I like keeping the 15 foot a different color. So I buy the 15 foot cables and they're blue. And the 3 foot and the 10 foot, it's obvious when you look at it, the difference. They're both black. It's nice to be able to just look at a cable and you know what size it is. And I keep a stack of them, of each of those sizes, in my trunk. See, this is a pretty full trunk it gets to be. But I actually have it organized where there's still room to put computers or some other things. Now, remember, I drive a Camry, so it's not an endless trunk, but I do have enough room that I can have my different bags. I have testing gear for testing the Cat5 connections. When I was done on Wednesday and I looked at my supplies, it was unbelievable of how much I unloaded from this week that I have to restock. And I have a smile because I was glad that I had the items as I needed them. I had the adapter. I keep a spare network card in there. I keep a spare video card. You never know what you're going to run into. So if you strategically have enough of the right equipment, of course you're going to run into that problem where, well, there's just no way you could have ever planned for that. That's going to happen. But I would say 95% of the time, when I run into a situation with a client, I have the solution on me, including a couple spare hard drives. I keep a 500 gig and terabyte SATA drive drives in my trunk, so I can also use them as an emergency. You got to have a flashlight. And we went over a long time ago, what should you keep in your tool bag? And I've done shows on what you should keep on your USB stick. Well, what should you keep in the trunk of your car? I would love to hear from consultants out there for some of the equipment that I didn't even cover that you cover. I know an electrician who's a friend of mine who has this super duper truck that's just huge. He is a store on wheels. There is nothing that he can run into at a house or at a commercial place that he's doing any electrical work that he does not have the spare part, the proper tool, the proper piece of equipment. It's unbelievable. And I mean, this is a huge truck. It's got compartments all over the place. And he has them all perfectly organized. And I look at that and I said, I'm never going to be like that. But I want to be close to having all of the simple things that I know that with my clients that I'm going to run into, that I'm prepared and I have everything with me as best that I can that would be expected, that my clients would expect for me to have. Certainly there's things, I don't carry a spare monitor unless I know I'm walking into a situation where I may need one. And I actually have a very small 15-inch VGA monitor that I can throw in the trunk if I need it. I have limits as to what I will keep. In between these two consulting jobs this week was filled with what I want to talk about next. Viruses and spyware. I am so tired of cleaning systems. As a matter of fact, tomorrow I'm going to be visiting another client and I'm going to be cleaning virus, you know, spyware junk, that, you know, the pop-up that says your system's infected and click here to purchase it or start scanning now and it'll save you and clean your system. Why do you click on the OK button? Stop. Just stop. And the people can't help themselves. They click and they click OK because they're sucked in, because it looks good and it looks like, hey, I'm infected. And that is the infection. You need to turn your computer off. The minute you see that, turn the computer off, pull out, disconnect the network, and then boot up into safe mode and start cleaning, because you're infected. The minute that screen pops up, you're done. That's it. What I am now doing is spending my life cleaning systems. I mean, I have all the right tools. We've talked about them. You know, we got the combo fix, the Malwarebytes, Super Any Spyware, the whole gambit of tools that we can run, boot in the safe mode. I got my procedures down to where, you know, I could clean a system pretty fast right now. This past Sunday, I thought I had a day off. I thought that. Two clients called, both with infections. Sunday morning, I had the desktop, was cleaning that. Sunday afternoon, I spent cleaning the laptop from the customer that his email, what he was infected with, it sent out spam and ugly links to everybody on his Hotmail distribution list. This was a little uglier. Again, I was able to clean this all up. I don't believe there is anything that we can install that can prevent this. Even the paid version of Malwarebytes, the paid version of Super Any Spyware, is not going to stop an employee or somebody from clicking the button and agreeing to everything that they see. I don't think there's any software. Only education can stop that. I am on a new mission to educate, and I pass that on to you. Educate. A couple years ago, we had to educate the world to not open attachments on an email. You know, no matter how much you want to see that naked body of that person, it's not there, and it's going to infect your computer. You just don't do it. We need to educate everybody of how to practice safe browsing and safe computing. And I know Kate's going to say, install Woot, you know, Web of Trust. You know what? They still don't listen. They don't. I can install everything at known to man, and you're going to have a problem. I just wanted to vent a little bit. Podnuts Pro's in the chat here and says, web blocker filter. I have a company that is using web blockers and filters, and they still get infected. There is no 100% cure or solution, because if there was, I would be selling it and I'd be installing it. I mean, there's going to be something that's going to certainly minimize it and keep it. You can lock down a computer, but in certain organizations, you can't. Some of the organizations that I'm dealing with the software and some of the things that they are running, we can't lock them down. I do have a client that we have all the PCs locked down. And guess what? We're not infected. I have them all using Firefox. Everything's locked down. And they, I would say, get minimal infections, certainly a lot less than everybody else. So I'm educating and I'm doing my best trying to share what to do when you come across a screen, a pop-up, and how to handle that. And the best thing that I can come up with is if you see it, turn the system off right away. Then you can always turn the system back on and see if you're still having the problem. In the chat, they're saying Windows Steady State, and I thought Microsoft was stopping support of that. I got to look into that. I thought Microsoft is stopping the support for Steady State. They are. That's not a solution going forward. Even though they're stopping it, it's still workable. We need to come up with a good process that we can communicate to our customer base to protect them. Now, I can see someone else saying, well, this is how you make a living. It is, but it's annoying. And it's not the way I want to make a living. I want to be productive and help my clients by expanding and doing what they need to, you know, they want to install some new hardware or some new applications. And those are the kind of things that I want. And I know my clients want to use me for support. This is just getting really annoying. I mean, I have complained about this a few months ago, I know once, where I'm just seeing an unbelievable increase in spyware infestations. I just needed to get that off my chest and vent a little bit. And let me know what you have in solutions for things that I haven't even discussed or talked about here as to ways of locking down and preventing spyware. Some are going to make sense for certain clients and some aren't, but I will talk about them all. We'll do another show on different options on preventing infections. Give a listen to this voicemail question.
Hi, Mike. This is Brian Goddard calling from the UK. First, let me say thanks for the help that you gave me on Hamachi, which is a question I asked some 3 or 4 episodes. The feedback has helped me to understand more what traffic is going through which ports, but it's not dedicated and I'm not sure it's all working, but at least I have a greater understanding. Okay, the question that I have for you today, and if you can help me with, is that I went to help a friend and they had 3 wireless PCs. Well, they actually only had 2. I got the third one up and running. Not going to go through all of that, but it was a very old model of a Toshiba satellite. Had to reinstall the OS. Anyway, got it up and running. So now you've got 3 wireless PCs coming from a standard Netgear router, which is supplying the whole home. So the router is on the middle floor, and the PCs are on the bottom and top floors. Connectivity is fine with all 3 PCs. Well, they had an additional PC, which makes a 4th, which was not working, which I got up and running. I noticed that there was a WG511 Netgear wireless card, which I then asked, had this previously been used? I was told it had been used and was working. Anyway, put it in, wasn't working, found the drivers, it came up live. Now, here's where I think I went wrong, and here's where I believe I've heard you in previous shows say to people not to do this, which is I actually used the wizard for the card, and I didn't use the wizard for the OS setup, and subsequently it was connecting. So now we've got 4 PCs on this wireless network, and these are 4 laptops on this wireless network. The 4th connects briefly for a second and then drops out. Okay, so I look at the drivers again. The drivers are installed properly, the card is working, the light on the card is flashing, it's showing connectivity. I then go into ipconfig, I do ipconfig release renew, that doesn't help, and then I realize that it's got a 169 address, so it's been self-assigned. Now I believe, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but I believe that was assigned because I went through the setup of the wizard for the card and not the setup for the wizard for the OS. So, and I think that's why it's self-assigned. Now, my issue is that I cannot get rid of that self-assigned 169 and turn that into a 192 so that all 4 PCs talk to one another. So if you know a way in which one machine on a network has a self-assigned address of 169 that you need to convert back to a 192 address to so that all the machines can talk, that's the fix that I'm looking for. You may well ask me, okay, what machine does it not connect on? Well, that may not be the OS that I'm going to be using. It's either going to be XP or Windows 7. I'm not sure which one I'm going to take off. At the minute, the one it's not working with is Vista. So Vista's the one that's on the machine, but that will be coming off. We'll either go back to XP, and that's a long story as to why I'm going to do that, but that's what they want. So the help I need is basically, how do I get that 169 address permanently without creating a static address. I don't want to do that because it's not a long-term fix, to a 192 address so all of the machines can talk to one another. Sorry, I've been a little bit long-winded, but needed to try and get as much detail so you can help me if you can. Thanks very much, Mike, and you're doing a great job. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Okay, very easy. Anytime you get a 169, that means you are not connecting to the network. The machine is not seeing the DHCP service that is assigning IP addresses. So it's not seeing the router that you have. And it's kind of interesting here, and you say router, but I say router, that it's not seeing it. There's nothing you can do except get the networking card working. So I recommend removing it, removing the adapter, go in, say uninstall, let it reinstall and load the driver. Make sure you're downloading the latest driver. But now, two things you have working against you. You know you have three stable machines working. So you got this one wireless card. They're so cheap. Go get another wireless card just to try it out. And I think you're going to be much happier. When you try the other card, I think you're going to find that it's going to connect up and all your issues are going to go away. You either have a card that is defective or just it's not paired up with the router that you have. All routers, all cards are not created equally. There are some pairings where you have certain cards with certain drivers. They just don't cooperate and want to connect to the proper to that router. That happens, and I've seen that happen. Also, is this laptop in range where there's no other interference of other wireless devices? Is it close enough to be able to get the IP address? Bring that laptop right into the same room as the wireless router and uninstall the driver, reinstall it, and then let's see what happens. If you're still having issues, go get another card. I know you're in the UK. I don't know what the return policies are. Like here in the States, you could go to Best Buy. You can get a wireless card, and if you want it to, within a few days, you could return it. Go to a PC place, a store that has a liberal return policy, and just give it a try. Buy a cheap wireless card, install it, hook it up, and if it works, great, you keep it, you win. And if it doesn't, now we gotta dig a little deeper. Now, here's another trick. If you use the software that comes with the wireless adapter to manage your network connection, then I recommend you use Windows to connect and use the Windows wizard to go and manage the wireless connection. Do vice versa. If you used Windows to connect to the wireless network, then go back and use the software that comes with the card. If you use the card, then try Windows to manage the wireless connection. I have had both instances work where I've used the other and I've got it to connect. I have another voicemail. Give a listen.
Hey, Mike, this is Paul from San Antonio calling in once again. Again, I'm on my cell phone. I would have preferred to call it through Skype, so it would be clearer this time, but my computer is in use at the moment. I had a comment on your last show. You mentioned the changes to Google Apps that are being rolled out currently, and I just wanted to make one minor correction. You had said that the change made it able for you to access your mail through a URL like mail dot and then your domain. You said previously you had to enter the long URL mail.google.com/a/ and then whatever your domain name was after that. And while you can always access your services that way, starting with either mail.google.com or replace mail with Docs or Calendar to access those services. That long URL will always work, but at the same time, you've always been able to use the alternative shorter URL as long as you set up the CNAME records directly on your host or domain settings. In order to make that happen, though, you can go into the control panel for your Google Apps. For instance, when you're logged into your Vanity Gmail account, there's a Manage This Domain link, and that'll take you over to the control panel. Or you can enter google.com/a/cpanel/ and then your domain name. And then once you're there, click on Settings, and there's a settings page for each service, from Calendar to Chat, Contacts, Docs, Email, Sites, Google Wave, and Mobile, if you have all those different sites there. If you set the CNAME record on your host or domain settings and named the CNAME mail, and then put the destination, I believe it's ghs.google.com, if I remember correctly. But when you're setting up Google Apps, they send you an email with that info. As long as that CNAME record is set up properly and working, your domain will always redirect when you enter mail and then your domain name. It will always redirect over to Google's Google App service, which will receive that request and then send you into your Vanity service, whether that be Docs or Gmail or Calendar or what have you. But in your cPanel for your domain, you must go into the settings, select the service you want. For instance, if you click on email, it'll tell you under web address, your users can access email at, and then it'll give you the URL. And again, the long URL will always work, no matter what you put here. But there is a change URL link, and you can tell it to change to mail dot and then your domain name. If you wanted to use something other than mail, like webmail, for instance, it can be whatever, normally you would refer to as a subdomain. It can be whatever term you want there. You just have to have a CNAME record pointing to Google, and that CNAME record has to be named whatever you want to appear before the dot domain name. Once you set that there, you can always type that in instead. So in this case, it would be mail.yourdomainname, and you'll go directly to your Gmail inbox for that vanity address. Again, the same thing works with Docs, Calendar, and all the other Google Apps services, as long as the CNAME record is there. One of the new things, though, is something called multiple logins, and you can set that up in your Google settings when you're logged into Gmail or any other Google service. You can go into the settings and turn multiple account logins on, and that will enable you to open up a separate tab in your browser, and then using the URL to your Vanity account, you can log into Gmail there. And so essentially you'd have two tabs open in the same window, one logged into your normal Gmail account and the other not logged into your Vanity-based Gmail account. It's always been, or at least it has for some time now, to where you could just go to mail.google.com, enter your Gmail user account name and password and log in. But where the username goes, you could put your entire email address for your Vanity account, and that would work. But if you were already logged into your normal Gmail account, it would prompt you to switch accounts. And you could still do that, but with multiple accounts signed in, you could actually go to mail.google.com and sign in with that, and then have your other login with your other account also through Google, through Gmail on a separate tab, and have them running simultaneously, so you don't have to be constantly switching between the two accounts when you want to check your mail. So I just wanted to clarify that. Again, just to wrap up, if you have the CNAME records set correctly, you can use whatever URL you want based on your domain to go straight to it, so you don't have to be typing in the long URL. But again, that will always work. And if you haven't looked at the control panel before, There's a lot of options in there for you to create multiple groups. As you already mentioned previously, though, you can set up many different aliases, and I'm not talking about the trick where you use the plus sign or something like that to create additional temporary addresses, but you can create one user account under Google Apps and then create multiple aliases for that. So you could have feedback@mydomain.net and maybe chat@mydomain.net or any number of those aliases tied to the one account. The restrictions that they have now are to the actual accounts, not email addresses. So that's an important distinction there. An account would actually be able to log into all the different apps in Google Apps that's available on your account. And again, it's been expanded now to include all Google services, including Picasa, Google Talk, any Google service you can log in with your full domain for your Google Apps account, and you can use those services that way. So again, just wanted to clarify that, and talk to you next time. Bye.
Thanks, Paul. I know it was a long voicemail. A great tip on making your Google Apps easier to access by creating a CNAME record in your DNS to match the Google Apps URL. That's a great idea. As a matter of fact, it gave me other ideas for CNAME records for my DNS for lots of other tips. So you could really take that, not just for Google Apps, but think of ways that you can manipulate your domain by creating shortcuts with your CNAME. That's a great tip. And certainly explore all of your Google Apps options when you're logged in. Take a look. They've added a lot of services now. The whole gamut of Google services are now available to your Google Apps account. If you purchase from Amazon or you know anyone purchasing from Amazon, please, please, please go to miketechshow.com, click on my Amazon link and make your purchase, and that will contribute a commission to help support the Mike Tech Show. I really appreciate it, and I thank everybody for your continued support and using that link. I so greatly appreciate it. Thank you. Music for tonight. I was listening on the radio to a block of Live, the group Live, which is actually near where I live. They're in York, Pennsylvania, they're from, and I've seen them a few times in concert. There's a song that they played that is just stuck in my head that I have to share with you, and it's called Overcome. Give a listen.
Holy water in my lungs. and spin around. Your help is here, but I'm parking this open space, but locking the gates of love. And I am overcome, yeah. I am overcome, baby. Holy water in my lungs, yeah.
That was live in the song Overcome, and I will have a link to their CD that you can purchase from Amazon. That is it for tonight's show. Thank you for listening, downloading, subscribing. I really appreciate it. All of your support, your questions, your voicemails, it's awesome. Don't forget, I didn't mention it in the beginning of the show, the Mike Tech Show meetup in Pittsburgh on June 4th. If you're attending, please send me an email so I can get a count for everybody that is going to be there. And I'm looking forward to that. And that's only a couple weeks away. So that's it. I will talk to you next week. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.